The magic of radio has taken us backstage at the Pheasant Run Playhouse in St. Charles, where the current attraction is the comedy Father of the Bride. And our guest today is the star of that show, a man who's been a star of the first degree for a long time on radio, in movies, and on TV, too. He's a man whom Edgar Bergen has called one of the cleverest ad-libbers he's ever worked with. Don Ameche, welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you, Chuck, very much.
What about that? Quite a tribute, being called one of the cleverest ad-libbers by a man who is a pretty clever man himself, Edgar Bergen.
Yes, Ed was a good ad-lib man. I never did know he said that, and I like Ed, and I respect his judgment a great deal, but I don't know. It's a little hard for me to believe that he's right about that.
Oh, I think he is very right about that. You worked with Bergen and McCarthy, and actually Charlie was a real person almost, wasn't he?
Oh, and yes, yes.
You worked with them on the Chase and Sanborn Hour, and
yes.
Of course you had the MC or master or host chore of the Chase and Sanborn Hour for quite a while, didn't you?
Yes, it was a long time I was on it.
When did you start with that?
1937.
37.
Mm-hmm.
And, you worked then with a lot of people who were featured as stars of that show, too, along the line.
Oh, yes. We had the format of the show called for a guest star each
uh-huh.
week. Generally, it was a woman because of me being the master of ceremonies.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little skit anywhere from 10, 12, 13 minutes on which Edgar would always base his second spot with Charlie on. He would base his second spot on the on whatever the skit was that we did, and then he'd do a real satire on it, which always mm-hmm. gave a lot of fun.
You were I believe first appeared on a show in radio called The Empire Builders.
Yes, that's right. Started September of 1930, which was Empire Builders was the name of the of the crack train for the Great Northern Railroad.
Uh-huh.
And we did stories supposedly... Oh, I don't know whether they were supposed to be true or not. I don't think they were. But they all had a locale somewhere
mm-hmm.
along the Great Northern mm-hmm. Route.
And that show then was about the same time you were doing the First Nighter.
Yes, I started First Nighter in about March of 1931.
Uh-huh.
I didn't actually start the program. A man by the name of Jack Doty started November 11th, 1930,
mm-hmm.
and I took it over, I think, in March, if I'm not mistaken, 1931.
Was this in Chicago?
Yes, it was.
You did a lot of radio work then right here in Chicago.
Yes, I stayed here until March 1st of 1936.
Well, you really have the dates right down pat, haven't you?
Yes,
all
I
the
do.
March 1st and things
yes.
like that. Well, you were on the National Farm and Home Hour.
That was a very rare appearance for
uh-huh.
me. It was a Saturday morning show, and every once in a while we'd uh-huh. go in and do a skit or something like that, but it wasn't a regular thing.
A little bit of research that I did on Don Ameche says that you played a character by the name of the Forest Ranger on that show from time to time, probably someone who came in and...
That could easily be. I don't remember it. Could easily
remember
be.
Everett Mitchell.
Oh, very well. Yes, indeed. Is he still around, by the way?
I don't know if he is or not.
Either.
I don't think he's doing anything in Chicago anymore.
I have a letter from a man that used to be a bartender in the Kinsey Grill, which is just around the corner from NBC.
Uh-huh.
And he had just had a letter from a man by the name of Charlie Lyon. Charlie was
oh,
one of the favorite
yes.
announcers around here. And Vin Pelletier, he was talking about, I don't know who all else, I can't remember. But it was kind of thrilling, kind of nice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Do you remember appearing, the old research fishing pole was out again, and I checked and I found your name listed in the cast of a program called Milligan and Mulligan.
Yes, that's right. That was on WGN.
Uh-huh.
We did that for, I don't know what it was, I think 26 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. A man by the name of Bob White wrote it and produced it. We were on late at night, I think 10:30 to 10:45, something like that, five nights a week.
Comedy adventure type
yeah, it was.
Thing.
Yes.
You were a detective.
Yes. Yes.
How about Betty and Bob?
I was on that also for, I would guess, at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
That was a soap opera. One
you
of
were,
the first.
You were on the Grand Hotel program, which also originated
also.
Here, right?
Yes, it did. It did. That was sponsored by a product of Campana's Italian Bomb, and I can't remember what... First Night it was sponsored by Italian
mm-hmm.
Bomb, and
mm-hmm.
I can't remember what the name of their product. Seems to me it was Dream, but I'm not... No, that I don't think that's right.
You were on Dream brings to mind a thing that you did with Francis Langford
yes.
and Frank Morgan.
That's right.
That was later, though, wasn't it?
Actually, Dream started out without the Bickersons.
Uh-huh.
Danny Thomas was a part of the show, and I was a part of the show, and it was not a success. And the original Bickersons was started by Phil Rapp, who wrote them all and produced them all. And Danny Thomas was the first of the two segments. They were half-hour shows, and the Bickersons would be one half, and then I would work with Danny Thomas in the other half. But the next year, we went with Old Gold, and that was when Frank Morgan came in.
Oh, I see, I see. Well, how about... when the Bickersons then actually started as part of the show that you did then with
Dream.
Danny Thomas.
For
Dream.
That's
the
right.
Dream
thing.
That
that's
was
right.
in the middle 40s or so.
Oh, I'm guessing about then. Uh-huh. I'm guessing about then.
With the Bergen and McCarthy thing, you were very much involved in the sketches that were on that show, and you did a lot with W.C. Fields when he would be a guest on that. And
yes, I did. I worked a great... Well, Bill was only on 13 weeks. I guess most people forget that, but for the whole 13 weeks, yes, of course I did.
As a guest spot? No, he was the host of the show for
No. I was the host, always was the host, but Bill Bill was just a guest with Bergen and McCarthy and myself. The four of us worked everyone. That was the first spot that he did. Later it became just Edgar Bergen and myself and Charlie. But that was he was part of the first one.
Yeah, it lasted for only 13 weeks.
Yes, Bill was pretty well gone by that time. Uh-huh. He was almost senile.
Yeah. You remember a famous show that I guess everybody refers back to all the time with Bill Fields and Bergen and McCarthy and Mae West, I think.
I don't remember whether Bill was still on then or not. But I remember the Mae West episode. Oh. My goodness, I should say I do. I almost got thrown off the air for life because of a skit. But I don't know whether Bill was on it or not.
Would you like to tell us about that sketch?
Well, the name of the sketch was, what was it? Adam and Eve, I think, was the name of it. And Arch Ober wrote it. Arch later became a very famous scriptwriter, radio scriptwriter. And it had been done before on the air. And... I was worried about the things, many of the words that were in the script, so I called Danny Danker, who was then the head of J. Walter Thompson, and Danny came down nearly, as I remember, sometime around 11, 11:30 at night, and I told Danny that I said, all these lines have got to come out, Danny, or I'm not going to do the show tomorrow because I'm frightened of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Danny said, you stay here. I was downstairs, and Danny went upstairs and spent the time with May, and... came back down and said, go home, go to sleep, everything is out. I said, fine, thank you, Danny, and went home. And the next day I came down, and we did the show, and while I'm introducing her, I can see her, you know, preening and getting all set for this thing. And she didn't put any of the lines back in, and she read them in the regular Mae West style, which was fine by me, and then did a skit with Charlie McCarthy, and that skit, I remember distinctly walking over to have something to eat with Edgar, between rehearsal and showtime, and I said, Ed, I think you're crazy for saying all these things you're saying. He said, well, what am I going to do now? It's this time already. Uh-huh. I said, well, I don't know, Ed, but I said, I'm really fighting for you. Well, the furor came not over any of the double entendre or the innuendos or anything like that. It was over, they claimed, making fun of the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And this was what started it all, and oh my, it got to be a real ruckus. It went to... It went to the House of Congress. Went
it
that
did.
Far.
Mm-hmm. Well, what they, was the ultimate
They ruled
conclusion?
Her off. Ruled her off.
Threw
supposedly
off the air.
For life, yes.
Yeah.
And well, I don't think she was on for, oh, it might have been 20, 25 years.
I doubt that she ever did anything
doubt
after
it.
That, yeah. Quite an episode,
yes,
though.
Yes, it was. It was.
A big tossed radio on its ear. It was
yes,
the first
it did.
X-rated radio show, maybe, something like that.
That's right.
How did you make the transition, Don Ameche, from radio to motion pictures?
Oh, I don't know. I'd had a little bit of legitimate theater background prior to having gone into radio. Not a great deal, but a little bit. And but that doesn't really mean anything because the two techniques are so entirely different stage from motion pictures. I don't know. I suppose it was a case of rationalizing and knowing how to do it and what to do and... I don't know. I never ever felt that I was as good in pictures anyway as I was in radio. So maybe I didn't make it as gracefully as I might have thought at one time I did.
Well, you were certainly ripe as far as your appearance was concerned for the silver screen at the time. A tall,
well,
good-looking, leading man type.
That isn't really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that I just didn't think I performed as well. Uh-huh. I don't think I had as good a technique in pictures as I did in radio.
Did you prefer doing radio over motion pictures?
No, it wasn't that at all. It actually doesn't make any difference. It never did make any difference to me, other than wanting to do something that I thought was good or had a chance of being good. No, I never had any preference, really.
Your first picture for 20th, and I guess that was the first screen appearance at all, was Sins of Man.
That's
right.
Right?
And released in 36.
It was. It started March 1st, 1936. That's when I got there.
Uh-huh.
March 1st. Mm. That's right.
Well, how did you get the role? How did you get... Who introduced you to motion pictures?
I came out and made a test for Metro in, I believe it was August of 1935, and that was handled by a woman by the name of Dima Harshbarger. And Dima was head of NBC Talent Bureau. Now, in those days, both Columbia and NBC had agencies where they hired, and you had to pay a commission to these agents. And she arranged for this test at Metro, and I made it. And I saw it before I went back to Chicago, and I didn't think it was any good at all. And some man on the West Coast by the name of Tom Oakey heard about the test. I don't believe he saw it. And he had a friend by the name of Scotty Dunlap. And Dunlap was part of an agency called Dunlap and Frank. And George Frank was the other partner. And George went over to Metro one day and took a look at this test, and he thought he saw something in it. And George, I told Tom Oakey to go ahead and contact George, see what he could do. So I got a call from George, and George said that he had arranged for a test for me with 20th Century in New York, not on the West Coast, in December of 1935. So I went to New York, flew to New York, and made the test, and flew back to Chicago, and I believe it was in, probably the middle of January. They offered me a contract. It was one picture, and then 5 one-year options after that. 40 weeks. They guaranteed you 40 weeks in those days out of 52, and there were five. It was a five-year contract, which was unusual in those days because they all were seven-year contracts. But I had a radio show, and it didn't really make an awful lot of difference to me whether I went or not, although I really, deep inside of me, wanted to go in the worst possible way. And I also had a clause in the contract saying I could do two radio shows. So that was how come this is the story of going on.
Well, you stayed with the 20th Century Fox then for about 8 years, didn't you?
It was a little longer than that. I always think it was about nine, but I'm not sure of that.
Well, in those 8 or 9 years, you treated us to some great films. Your first starring role was Ramona, I think.
That was the second picture I made,
Second picture?
And yes.
You had star billing then.
I believe I did. I don't know whether it was over the title. I think I was second to Loretta Young. Loretta Young had first billing, of course, but I believe I had the same size billing, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, things like in Old Chicago in 1938, you played the son of Mrs. O'Leary at the time of the Chicago fire. And I guess Tyrone Power and Alice Faye were...
Tyrone was a brother of mine, so if I was a son, well, he had to be. Yeah. I didn't really know that we were sons of Mrs. O'Leary. I don't remember it that well. I remember the picture. Yes, Ty was in it. Alice Faye was in it. Alice Brady was in it. Andy Devine was in it.
You did a lot of things with Tyrone Power and Alice Faye.
Quite a number, yes.
Things like Alexander's Ragtime Band.
That was
and
right shortly after that, after in Old Chicago.
Probably one of the best, one of your earliest straight dramatic roles was in The Three Musketeers.
That wasn't a dramatic role at all. It was a parody on The Three Musketeers because the three Ritz brothers
were
in
it.
Yes.
Yeah, but you had more or less a...
Well, he had to play straight.
Yeah,
I played D'Artagnan, and of course he had to play straight,
right.
But they completely fouled up the story of The Three Musketeers.
Don Ameche and the Ritz brothers, quite a quartet, I think.
Yes, yes, it was. I worked with them in a couple of shows.
You worked with Betty Grable, too, in her first starring picture,
Down Argentine Way.
Yeah, that was in 1940.
Was that in 1940? Yeah. I don't remember.
And how about Carmen Miranda? You did some things with her. I know
that was the same picture.
In Rio? She was in Argentine Way,
yes,
too.
Yes, but all her footage was shot in New York, and I didn't meet her prior to Down Argentine Way. And then she did work in Night in Rio, yes. Excuse me.
Well, some of the things that I wanted to ask you about your motion picture career, what was your impression of Hollywood when you arrived on the scene? What was it like? You were from show business, radio, But now you're going into a totally different vehicle as far as performing was concerned. Were you awestruck at this? Were you, or did you take it as a matter of fact? Or what was the scene? What did you, what could you draw us a radio picture of the scene in Hollywood when you?
Oh,
when you
I
got
don't
there?
Know how much of a picture I can draw for you. Was I awestruck? No. Did I enjoy being out here? Uh-huh. Yes. First of all, to come from a climate like this in March, having gone through the winters, it seemed to me they were so much more severe in those days. And I never was comfortable in cold weather ever, even though I was born in Kenosha, Wisconsin, just a short ways up here. Spent most of my life, my younger life, around here. I never, ever liked it. And it, at that time, 1936, it was such a clean city. I guess probably this is the first impression that you got when you drove from the airport. I landed at Burbank Airport. Drove to 20th Century Fox. I went right to work, as a matter of fact. And the palm trees and the air was clean and the streets were clean and the houses were white or they were stucco and they were foliage galore, you know, and all this was highly impressive, so far as I was concerned anyway. And then went on a lot, and 20th Century, all the time that I was there, was a very friendly place. They were very good to you. They would do almost anything for you to make you comfortable. If you wanted your dressing room done over, they would do that. I remember one time I was in New York doing a publicity thing on the Kate Smith show for Suwannee River. And a forest fire came, and it started down toward where I was living at the time, which was in the San Fernando Valley in Encino. And Harry Brand, who was head of publicity, called me in New York and said, "Don't worry about the fire. We have two station wagons there 24 hours a day. So just put it out of your mind. Nothing will happen to your children or any of your possessions out there." This is the kind of consideration.
They really took
care of them. They certainly did. And Zanuck was a most considerate man. I never ever once asked to see Daryl that he didn't see me. He was completely at ease with you and wanted to do everything in his power to make it easy for you, because he was getting performances out of all these people at that time. The only so-called stars he had were Alice Faye and Tyrone Power and myself. So that might have been an influencing factor. I don't know, although I doubt it. I doubt it, because another time, shortly after that, I was in Europe in 1938, and I was taken with appendicitis in Holland, the university town of Holland. Utrecht was the name of the town. And Zanuck was in Paris, he and Joe Skenk. And when he heard I got appendicitis, and they operated on that night, it was bad enough so that they, in talking to the doctors back home, they suggested they go ahead and do it, which they did. Well, I don't think it was 2 days later, Zanuck and Skenk both took the train up, spent like 2 hours with me, then took the train back to Paris. And you know, you don't think of things like that happening today.
Much more than just a someone to make money for them.
Oh, far, far more.
Really considerate of them.
Far more. And everyone was, you knew every member of the crew when you walked in, no matter where it was or what stage you were working on. You knew everyone and knew them by their first names. And there was no such thing as being late on the set. No such thing as coming in without knowing your lines. No such thing as not being considerate of your fellow man. You know, it was just almost like a home.
Did you go from one picture right into another?
In the beginning, I did, yes, because I think all three of us made about six pictures a year for the first 2 years we were there.
Well, you were really grinding them out.
Yes, it was, especially with a radio show along with it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So it was hard work, very, very hard work.
20th was the home of the American-made costume drama, though, I think. They did an awful lot of pictures in the 30s and the early 40s. Not necessarily things like the Three Musketeers, but a lot of early Americana, 1800s, turn of the century type pictures. Things like In Old Chicago and Suwannee River. Now, you played Stephen Foster.
I did, in Suwannee River,
Suwannee River, and Al Jolson was in that.
He was. Andrea Leeds also was in it.
Well, I don't think we could talk at all about the career of Don Ameche without touching at least briefly on the story of Alexander Graham Bell, which you made with Loretta Young and Henry Fonda. And I would guess that most people identify you with that picture more than any other film. Is that a fact?
I don't know whether most people do. I don't know whether that's the proper qualifying adjective, but certainly a great number do.
Would you tell us the reaction initially of the public to that film?
I mean,
I
really
know it was a hit, but did you get
really
letters
I can't remember.
As Belle?
I can't remember. First of all, none of us ever saw our fan mail.
Never did.
Oh, no. Heavens alive. You were getting probably 1,500, 2,000 letters a week.
You mean the photograph that I wrote for of you?
It was my signature, but the... How, what are you going to do?
You didn't see that, really?
No. What are you going to do with 2,000 letters a month? You know, how
I'm
do you
handle
that? I'm crushed
now. Here I thought all these years that the Don Ameche photograph that I've had on my mirror was really... The stamp was licked by you.
No. No.
But that was a big part of Hollywood in the so-called golden age, the fandom.
They were most meticulous about that. Mm-hmm. Everything was answered. Everything. They had, I don't know what kind of a staff they had at that time in every studio. They were very particular about that, very careful, and I think rightfully so, too.
Were you pretty much isolated from the movie-going public? Did you ever really get a chance to see the people that were going to your movies?
Not very often.
Not too often?
No.
What, I suppose, and the only satisfaction that you could have of a job well done was the numbers at the box office, I suppose.
Oh, no. No, no. You'd go look at these pictures. Uh-huh. You'd look at the product, and then you would determine whether or not you thought you were pretty good in it or pretty bad in it or whatever it might have been. Oh, yes, you'd always go
well,
see it.
But, I mean, as opposed to you just got off the stage at the Pheasant Run Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
When the curtain was falling, the audience was applauding wholeheartedly, and they enjoyed the performance. And you knew instantly and throughout the performance with the reaction of the people in the theater that they were enjoying your performance.
That's right.
But you didn't have that kind of a rapport with your film audience.
No,
Didn't you ever crave to find... Did you ever sneak inside a theater when the picture of yours was showing just to get the reaction
Not
of the
Not that I remember, no.
Public?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a one-way street, then. It was.
Well, you could look. It's a whole different thing. You know, it wasn't made to have instantaneous response.
Uh-huh.
The medium just says it's wrong. It's not that. It's not that at all. And so is television, excepting for shows filmed with live audiences.
Uh-huh.
The only way you could really judge whether or not you thought it was any good was people that you trusted that would see it and give a critique of some kind, or you yourself would go see.
Uh-huh.
And you could generally tell whether or not, although not always, it's pretty hard to be objective, really, for an actor, but to a degree you could tell.
Are you a saver, a collector? Do you have some prints of your films?
None.
None?
No.
Nothing at all?
Mm-mm.
You wish that you had some?
No, not at all.
Turn on The Late Show and watch a picture once in a while?
The only one that I can remember having watched twice. I saw about 10 minutes of Moon Over Miami, and I would guess that was at least 20 years ago. I was on a late, late show in New York. I just come in, and I think Ms. Ameche turned on the TV, and I saw about 10 minutes of that. And then not too long ago, two or three months ago, I was with someone that had never seen Alexander Graham Bell.
Uh-huh.
And it was on. I was in Palm Springs, and I looked at the picture, the whole picture, from beginning to end, and mainly wanted to see what Hank... How good Hank was,
uh-huh.
How good Loretta was, how good Charlie Coburn was, Gene Lockhart, uh-huh. These people were all in the picture, and Spring Byington. And I was as close to objectivity as I ever have allowed myself to be or ever been able to be,
uh-huh.
Watching that picture. And I must say, first of all, it was a period picture when it was made, which allows it to stand up better than were the modern picture when it was made. But I was... pleasantly pleased.
Good.
And that's the only two times that I've seen.
Well, we've been pleasantly pleased to see your films through the years, and I guess people who've been on Broadway not too long ago saw Don Ameche in Silk Stockings and Holiday for Lovers, and you were in Goldilocks.
Yes.
It was a musical version of the fairy tale and all kinds of things. What are you... what do you have up your sleeve next after Pheasant
Not a
Run?
Thing, not a thing. Oh, I play a couple of other places
uh-huh.
after this. But so far as any big plans, no, I don't have any.
Television saw you as host of the International Showtime.
Yes, that's right.
It was a great show with all the circus acts from all over the world, I guess.
It was real quality.
Uh-huh.
The only drawback, if there was one, is did you like a circus or didn't you like a circus?
Mm-hmm.
If you like circus, it's the best that you can
yeah.
see.
Well, Don Amici, we appreciate this chance to chat with you this afternoon on Those Were the Days, and we know that Father of the Bride continues to play to happy audiences here at the Pheasant Run Playhouse. It'll do so until December 19th. And
that's
home
right.
For Christmas for you?
No, not actually. No, I start rehearsal again the following day after I close here, as a matter of fact.
What's the next play?
Champagne Complex.
Oh, that's a goodie.
Well, it didn't have a big Broadway run, but I thought it was miscast on Broadway myself. The reason I'm doing it, I think it might work. I hope so.
It will work with Don Amici. Thank you very much for sharing some memories with us today.
Thank you for coming.